It's 8:35 on the Breakfast Club, and let's bring in our friends from the Lakeville Journal. That would be Janet Manco and also Cynthia Hostringer. You guys there?
We are here.
Hello.
Right.
All right. So now I've
before anything,
this
we're
is pretty funny. I have lost my headphones. Do you have headphones there, Jill?
Yes, thank God.
It's the cats.
Well, anyways, we'll start things off with the front page, and on the front page, a picture of the Great Falls power plant and a story that I was actively involved in all weekend long. And actually this week when I went to, over 2 days, over 37 websites and announced that the Great Falls were closed to the public. Cynthia, I'll let you take over Patrick Sullivan's story.
So we've been covering the story, I would say, since 2012, just looking back through our archives over the weekend. With the incredible overcrowding of the falls in both Kent and Salisbury Falls Village, and the potential danger of it, and the drownings that we have once every year or two, largely people from out of town who seem to have maybe had some experience with waterfalls in a native country, but don't really understand that really intense danger of the water that's coming down what looks like a relatively small fall. So you often see literally a couple hundred people out at the falls in Falls Village, standing right at the bottom of the falls where there's a rotator movement that's happening with the water. And I guess the good thing is that more people aren't hurt every year, but also I think it gives people a false sense of security. So over the years, we've been in touch with Eversource. We've been in touch with Johanna Hayes' office, our congresswoman, through Emily Armstrong. We've been in touch with the selectmen, and we've had photographs that we've taken through the years of people sort of, you know, as in the situation, parents who are standing in the water with their backs turned to very young, small children, and the potential danger for them to get swept away. And again, largely nothing bad happens, but on this weekend I was listening to, there were just a ton of sirens going by my house in Lakeville, and I put on the scanner, and there was a river rescue going on that Janet nicely ran out and caught just the tail end of. And there was a young boy who had been playing in the river, and the water is sometimes diverted by the power company, but it was not being diverted on Sunday afternoon. There were, as Marshall was saying, hundreds of people, even more than normal, because so many of the trails are closed, because the Kent access is closed, because the Town Grove in Salisbury was closed. Very, very overcrowded. A COVID danger right there, but so many people standing there and playing in that water that is very hazardous. So this little boy got swept away by the current, managed to grab onto a rock, and was scared to then come towards shore from the rock, and really, who could blame him? So volunteers from Lakeville, North Canaan, and Falls Village all worked together to get him out, and I think they were talking about putting a ladder across the river at one point. I think what they did ultimately was they went out there with a rope and carried him in. But as a result of that, but also the intensive overcrowding of the falls, not just this year, but for several years now, First Light is finally closing access to it. And the tricky part is, as in Kent down at Bulls Bridge, where they had closed access to Bulls Bridge, people would just stop at different spots along the river, park, and walk in, which is, you know, not necessarily more dangerous, but certainly not safer. And we had a death of a young woman, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe last year.
Well, we had two people drowned in Kent, down in Kent, by the Bulls Bridge this year. I mean, right. Yeah, and what was different about this gathering, and which really amazed me, was that people above the falls were set out in the pools of water and in the streams of water with tables and umbrellas, and it literally looked like Coney Island for those 2 days. And yeah. And then when the crews had to come to help the rescue, they had trouble getting the trucks through. That was, you know, my whole thing was and then, of course, all the trash that was left because there's so many people was amazing.
Right. And don't forget, there's no bathroom there. And so people are coming for the day, eating lunches, and then, you know, somewhere out in that woods, there's an interesting pile of something.
It's just, it became an untenable situation this weekend. But I give credit to the first selectman, Henry Todd and Curtis Rand. They got together with the DEEP, with First Light, and they all came up with the idea to close it and get permission, because the First Light has to get permission to close it, because that's part of their licensing to have the facility, is that they have to have some recreational things there.
Well, you know, the problem is that what they're closing is they're closing the access, which is actually the best place to go in. That's the boat launch where there's the picnic tables and there's parking and the water's pretty calm there. What's happening is that people are hiking up on the trail. They've actually created a new trail down from the road where they've just slid down, and it's turned to mud. So there's this new path down to the base of the falls, and that's not what's being closed, and that's the really dangerous spot.
So it's going to be interesting to see how it breaks over, because this warm and hot weather we've got looks like it's here through the weekend.
Yeah.
Move on to the other story. On the other side, coronavirus masks symbolize the cultural divide, and we were talking about this on the radio earlier this week, is that it's hard to believe that the masks would become political, but they have.
Even up here in Connecticut, and I would say I'm always happy when I go someplace where you could expect that there might be some anti-mask behavior, and that the stores, and for the most part the shoppers, are all wearing their masks, very respectful. I still see a lot of guys when I go to the transfer station getting out of their pickup trucks and sort of defiantly not wearing a mask, which I find extraordinary. But, you know, I guess the rest of us will wear our masks and our gloves. So Deb Alexinas went out and did a lot of on-the-street research and happened to come across a couple in Kent who had arrived there by motorcycle and were sitting on a park bench and sort of sounded off about how important it is to them to not wear their masks. And she interviewed some shopkeepers, because it's not a law that you have to wear a mask. It's recommended. And a lot of places are being pretty strict about it, including Le Bon's grocery store in Salisbury. But they have there's no action that they can take other than to try to deny you access. And if somebody insists on coming in, the instruction that the store personnel are being given is, you know, let's not have a fight start here. But in this area where police protection is often 30 minutes away, it can be tricky. And of course, you know, we don't really have enough police here. I know that this is a tough moment with our police across America, but we have a very small police force at Troop B, and it's covering a very wide area. You can't really get police support when you need it in these situations. So you do sometimes see people without masks in stores. You see people sort of very blatantly ignoring the 6-foot distance regulation. So Deb went around and talked to some of the storekeepers about how they're handling that. So far, we haven't really seen in the police blotter any situations of people coming to blows because of masks.
Well, what I tell people who are against masks right now is, if you don't do it now voluntarily, and what's going across the country keeps going, believe you me, you're going to have to sooner or later wear them mandatory. So, because it's obvious that masks and social distancing work. Just look at New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Massachusetts now. It does work. It takes a while, but it does work. So,
and as people sometimes say, the masks may be uncomfortable and hard to breathe through, but a ventilator is much harder to breathe through.
Absolutely. All right. Millbrook horse trials are canceled. It's just like everything else, just about.
Yeah, although they had announced so Lena Zato, who was a summer intern with us many, many years ago, has graduated from college and came back, and it, like many young people, is up here, and because she'd been trained by us, she came back and did a really excellent story on the horse community. So she's a big rider, and she talked to Linda Bushnell at Rocky Meadow, which is now in Millbrook, and she talked to Susan Bedingfield at Town Hill Farm in Lakeville, and when she had started the story, actually when she had finished the story, the Millbrook horse trials had been going on, and that was really just, I think, 2 weeks ago, and they had been saying, you know, we're going to be very careful, we're going to do this and that, and then they finally decided, just as we were about to go to press, that they were going to cancel. So, you know, we're trying not to do a million stories about coronavirus, because for the most part, people kind of know what's going on, but stuff does keep changing every week and not really following the path that we had expected.
Yeah.
But so with the horse barns, as with everything else, people are being expected to wear masks. It doesn't seem like the horses are susceptible to it, and you know, of course, we don't want them infected. We don't want them passing it.
All right. And we'll move on. Sometimes we just can't get away from the coronavirus stories, even though we try. I want to move on to our towns on page A3, because a story that has captivated not only people around here but across the country is the cat that was found in a bag that was thrown in the mudge pond. Just simply lucky the bag stayed afloat long enough for somebody launching their boat to go rescue the cat. It's just an unbelievable animal abuse story.
It is, and it's not as though a guy posted on Facebook that he'd found this bag with a cat, a living cat inside it, and he took the cat out and called Lee Sowell, our animal control officer, who's a big, super compassionate person. And it's not like they took the cat out of the bag and said, oh, this cat is really, really, you know, a menace and danger. It seems like an incredibly sweet cat. And when you look at the photo, it's got these beautiful eyes. So hard to know. I'm sure somebody had some reason. I can't imagine what a good reason would be, but they tried to drown their cat and just left it there in the water. Or, you know, who knows? Like, I guess we'll never know. It seems like we've been looking for a couple weeks now for the person that did this.
Well, there's $6,000 worth of rewards out offered from various organizations. So I do believe that someone will have to come up and answer for that. I want to go into something good, though, here. And that is your two new interns. We left them off first talking. You've got two new interns in for the summer.
We do. And I want to say we have such a great experience with our interns every summer, and it's a little disappointing to us that we don't have more local people doing it. We have a lot of young people come from New York, and they work really hard, and they have a great time, and we get a lot out of them. But we had a couple people who were local who had checked in and sort of said, oh, you know, we're not interested, and this has been the pattern in the last couple of years, so we'd really like to encourage young people, maybe not this summer, but maybe next summer, especially, you know, we try to make it fun for them. We try to find stories that are of interest to them. And so with this year we had Mary John and Annabelle Baum, and we had said to both of them, we can't really give you the full internship. We can't really do page design with you. We can't go to town halls with you and teach you about local government. But they signed on anyway and did a wonderful job. And Alexander Wilburn, our senior editor, had done a really sweet Zoom workshop with them that went over several weeks where he taught them how to pitch a story, how to prepare questions for an interview, and they seemed to enjoy it. They did great work for us, and we hope they'll come back next summer and do the full internship. And then next week we expect to have stories on Hunter Lyle, whose sister Caitlin had started as an intern with us, and she is local from Sharon, and Hunter just graduated from college with a degree in journalism, and he's been writing for us, so you've seen his name in the paper lately. And then we have Shane Stanfill, and so I'm contradicting myself and saying that Shane was also a local kid from North Canaan who had been an intern last summer and came back and did a couple of weeks of writing for us. So he's got stories throughout this week and next week's paper.
All right, your story on the cell tower and a balloon float. Gosh, whenever I hear of a balloon float, I think when we first brought KZE, we had to do two balloon floats at different locations.
Well, they did do balloon floats in, I think it was January, the official balloon floats. Yeah. AT&T and Homeland Towers had to do an official balloon float as part of their process of applying to the Connecticut Siting Council. And so the way the Siting Council is set up is no local towns really want to allow cell towers in, but part of the Telecommunications Act is they are required in the same way that electricity is required as part of what we consider modern life in America. So the Siting Council is charged with deciding how many towers is okay and how many towers is too much and where they're really needed and where they're not. So the town of Kent and the residents of Kent are deeply opposed to this tower going up, even though it's in an area that's not well covered and where there are a lot of vehicle accidents and it's hard to get 911. So a citizens group led by Todd Powell did a second balloon float over 4th of July weekend. And they do feel that the balloons are visible from areas that are considered scenic and rural. So that's the tack that they're taking as they're opposing this with the Siting Council. But the majority of what this article is about is that there's going to be a public hearing on July 23rd. So we've got instructions in here on how you can sign on and offer public comment for that July 23rd hearing, which is all going to be done on Zoom.
And you've got a story on the marketing process for Region 1 moving forward.
Right. Janet Carlson, who's so interesting, and, of course, her husband, John Sanders, is on the Region 1 Board of Education and had recused himself, of course, properly, as the board was discussing hiring his wife to do marketing. And this is an interesting year when the marketing could really do something because we've already had some inquiries for Housatonic Valley Regional High School from people who are moving up here. You know, as we know, there's been a phenomenal increase in rentals and property sales with a lot of people coming up from New York, and so some of those people will have school-aged children. It could be the year when we have more than, for example, the graduating class at Lee Kellogg was five students this year. So we'll see. It could be interesting.
All right. I can go along with that. I mean, coming into Sharon, I saw over the past several months, 6 for sale signs. Realtors were 6 for 6.
Yeah.
Houses were all sold. And my brother's daughter and her husband bought a house in Cornwall.
Yay.
Because they want to spend half their time up here and go and telecommute and then also go into the city once a week. So that's what's going to happen up here. If you've got a house and you want to get out of it, this is a perfect time, probably.
Right, and an interesting moment, too, for the cell towers, where as we're talking about Kent and a lot of people, you know, who are local, but also people who are weekenders, really opposing this tower. But when you talk to real estate agents, they say it's got to have internet and cell phones.
All right, let's go to the editorial and opinion pages. First of all, I'll start off with Peter Steiner's cartoon. Obviously, the entrance to heaven, if you are arriving from Florida, Texas, or Arizona, you must quarantine for eternity. I like that very much. Let's go on to your editorial, Janet. We sought your support, and you gave it generously. Now what?
Right. We're ready to look forward to the next steps. We have been since we did our membership model initiative at the end of last year, and we have moved forward even with COVID-19 at a time when we lost much advertising that we certainly thought we would have at this time of the year. And like everybody, you know, we just had to pivot and figure out how to do things differently once again and still support our local economy. So This is what we're talking about. We're putting out the information of how we got here, where we are right now, and we're looking to our readers to give us their input on where they think we should go next. And we will be doing another survey, which we did in October of last year. We'll be doing another survey this summer to ask our readers their opinions on specific things, but I'll say, please do read the editorial for the nitty-gritty and information on where the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News are at now and looking forward to, and do let us know your thoughts on it.
All right. Turning back to pages in Lakeville 100 years ago, W.G. Halliwell building a new garage 25 by 50 feet with living rooms on the second story. Bingo.
I know. I bet that's still there. When I read that, I thought, where is that? I bet that's still there, and those people are renting that, or they're selling it right now.
Lots of letters everywhere, everything from macaroni salad to Brian Oler to dog parks to cartoons to the affordable housing and, of course, Falls Village's affordable housing. Lots of letters.
Lots of letters, and really informative, interesting ones. So do give them a read and weigh in. We have 2 interesting letters on affordable housing, one on the Falls Village proposal that has gone in, and one relating to the Falls Village proposal, but from Virginia Bush Sutman, who is in Kent and works on their affordable housing there and really has some interesting things to say and invites people to come and look at their affordable housing.
All right. And we'll take a look at some of your columns, The Long View by Tom Shackman, A Modest Economic Proposal, and Chris Powell.
Chris Powell writes about raises for those who work for the state in Connecticut. He thinks it could be a great issue, but who will have the courage to put it out there? It is it's unacceptable, really, that our state workers are getting a 5.5% increase in their salaries at a time when the state economy and the national economy and the world economy is in such dire straits. So Chris makes some great points about this, and do read it, think about it, and let your legislators know where you stand on it.
All right, and in the last 2 minutes, so I guess we can take a look at Compass.
The biggest story on the page is actually the physically small story, which is that the Massachusetts museums are open again. So the Clark, Mass MoCA, and Norman Rockwell are opening this weekend, which is very exciting. And, of course, people are expected and asked to respect social distancing. And, of course, there's outdoor beautiful grounds at all of them, Mass MoCA a little bit more urban. But information on those is at their websites. We've got Erica Prudhomme, who had a show of her paintings at the Cornwall Library, which I actually went to the opening of, and she's a very interesting, super super local Cornwall person, and Annabelle Baum, our intern, had interviewed her and got a little bit of her very interesting life story. And the show is opening again at the library, but you have to make an appointment to see it. And Margot Martindale, one of my favorite actresses, and I thought I saw her at a St. Andrew's tag sale in Kent last summer and just couldn't believe it because how exciting. And it turns out she does live in Kent. And she generously has offered to do a Zoom talk that's coming up on Wednesday, July 15th. And they have some other interesting Zoom talks coming up, including the beloved George Potts and Frank Way, who's doing incredible food at his frankfood.com.
All right. More stories. We just touch on a few of the stories here as we take a look at the pages of the Lakeville Journal. Also, don't forget the incredible Millerton News, both doing a good independent job of keeping people informed in our area. All found at tricornernews.com. And we will speak to you guys again next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thank you.
Take
Happy
care.
Birthday.
Thank you. Bye.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. And, of course, if you missed the entire show, it will be up online very soon at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on This Week in the Lakeville Journal.